Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, January 4th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, P&Z approves Par 3 Suites zone change. Driving range would be located at Thomason and Loop 250. By Mella McEwen. A new development at Thomason Drive and South Loop 250 West is proceeding after a presentation before the Planning and Zoning Commission. Commissioners unanimously approved a zone change from PD, Planned District for Housing Development in part, Office Center in part, Recreation Center in part, and Shopping Center in part, to an amended PD, Planned District for Housing Development in part, Office Center in part, Recreation Center in part, and Shopping Center in part, on the 37.65-acre tract. Park Hill presented a plat that included a driving range that will be situated east-west on the property for Par 3 Suites, a golf entertainment venue that will be developed alongside a planned hotel, office space, restaurant, and retail space at the site. Netting will also be erected along the north, east, and south sides of the development to protect traffic on Loop 250 from golf balls. Eric West with Park Hill told commissioners Par 3 Suites are located alongside freeways in other communities and promised the loop would be protected. He added that this is just one configuration and it could change before being finalized. Park Hill is working with the seller of the property to ensure the property zoning is in place for development and said Par 3 had provided the specifics for its site, including the driving range, West said. Commissioners also unanimously approved a request by Drew Wegman for a zone change from MF-16, Multiple Family Dwelling District, to TH, Townhouse Attached Dwelling District, to the east of Beale Parkway, south of Blue Haven Drive. Wegman sought the zone change to allow for the construction of townhomes. The property is in the process of being platted with plans to split the acreage into 40 individual lots. There will also be a new road constructed, which will be a 50-foot right-of-way and have a circular drive design around the townhomes. In other action, commissioners approved a request by Maverick Engineering for a zone change from LR, Local Retail District, to RR, Regional Retail District, in order to develop retail at 2301 North Big Spring Street. Approved a request by Steve Jeter for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption at The Venue, an event and reception center at 3201 Elkins Road. The venue is already in operation, with hours from 10 a.m. to midnight, Sunday through Thursday, and from 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. the following day, Friday and Saturday. Jeter is proposing the same hours for alcohol service. This article is entitled, Texas Representative Pfluger Backs McCarthy, by Ben Schaffer. Congressman August Pfluger cast multiple votes for Kevin McCarthy during the Republican leader's failed attempts to become the next Speaker of the House. According to the Washington Post, 19 Republicans voted twice for someone other than McCarthy to take over the role as House Speaker. Those included three Texans, U.S. Representatives Michael Cloud, Chip Roy, and Keith Self. One person voting against McCarthy was Representative Lauren Boebert of Colorado. She appeared with Pfluger in Midland for a Second Amendment rally in September 2021. McCarthy has come to Midland multiple times, including in February 2021, when he visited a Diamondback rig. He has also appeared in Midland for fundraisers. McCarthy was the House Minority Leader until the GOP gained control of the House during the 2022 midterm elections. He became the first Speaker candidate in 100 years to fail to win the gavel from his own party members on the first round of voting, the Associated Press reported. He has failed in second and third votes. Bloomberg reported 19 GOP members voted against him in the first two rounds, and the opposition grew to 20 in the third. The Associated Press reported, Republicans adjourned in disarray Tuesday night, ending a raucous first day of the new Congress, but hoping to somehow regroup on Wednesday from his historic defeat. This article is entitled, That Was One Big Haboob, or Dust Storm, Near Big Spring. Man Manages to Snap Photos of the Strong Windstorm with Drone, by Stuart Doreen. That is one big mountain of dust. Hunter Swerdloff took this picture right off State Highway 176, 5 miles northwest of Big Spring in Howard County. I've been in a few dust storms before, but that was the first time I've had a drone with me to get those photos, Swerdloff wrote. The worst dust storm I've been in was in La Mesa in February 2021, where I could barely see a few feet in front of me on State Highway 349, so I pulled over and waited it out. Swerdloff is a petroleum engineer by degree and is currently a lease manager for Crown Quest. I'm hoping to progress in my career and become a drilling or completions engineer soon, Swerdloff wrote, rather than a traditional lease manager that operates oil wells. I manage fresh water supply and salt water disposal wells and the pipeline systems between them. Swerdloff wrote that the big pits in each photo are frack pits that he manages. My wife and I have lived in Midland since 2018, but I've been working out here since 2016, Swerdloff wrote. Prior to starting with Crown Quest in March of 2021, he worked for Latshaw Drilling and Cimarex Energy, all on the drilling side. It wasn't until working for Crown Quest that he received experience in production, he wrote. What is a haboob? Britannica.com says the strong windstorm usually occurs primarily along the southern edges of the Sahara in Sudan, as well as in arid parts of North America, such as Arizona and Texas. The weather phenomenon is associated with large sandstorms and dust storms and may be accompanied by thunderstorms. A haboob may transport huge quantities of sand or dust, which move as a dense wall that can reach a height of 1,000 meters, about 3,300 feet, Britannica.com states. The term haboob is taken from the Arabic word hab, meaning wind. This article is entitled Odessa Man on Top 10 Most Wanted List by Mercedes Cordero. An Odessa man has made the Texas 10 Most Wanted Sex Offender list. Solomon Olivas Marquez, 59, is wanted for failure to comply with sex offender registration requirements with a previous conviction. Marquez has ties to the Midland-Odessa area, according to the DPS bulletin. Marquez was convicted in 2002 of aggravated sexual assault of a child after an incident involving a 6-year-old girl and was sentenced to 5 years of confinement. In 2010, he was convicted of failure to comply with sex offender registration requirements and sentenced to 3 years of confinement and 3 years of probation. The Ector County Sheriff's Office issued a warrant on March 31, 2022, for his arrest for failure to comply with sex offender registration requirements with a previous conviction. Texas Crime Stoppers is offering a cash reward of up to $3,000 for any information that leads to Marquez's arrest. Callers will remain anonymous. To be eligible, tipsters must provide information to authorities using one of the following methods. Call the Texas Crime Stoppers hotline at 1-800-252-TIPS 8477. Submit a web tip through the Texas 10 Most Wanted website or Facebook page. Submit a tip through the DPS mobile app. This article is entitled Midland Animal Shelter Temporarily Closed by Mercedes Cordero. An increase in animals showing signs of an illness has caused Midland Animal Services to close to the public temporarily, the city said in a press release. The shelter will be deep cleaned and disinfectant. All symptomatic animals have been tested and will be treated pending the lab results, according to the press release. The following services will be available by appointment Monday to Friday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Call 432-685-7420 for an appointment. Cat intake, deceased animal drop-off, spay-neuter voucher pickup, field calls. The public will be notified when we resume normal business hours. This article is entitled Most U-Haul Rentals, Texas Bound by Steve Brown, The Dallas Morning News. That U-Haul trailer you saw on the highway is probably headed to Texas. Texas was the destination for the largest number of renters of U-Haul trailers and trucks for the second consecutive year in 2022. The Lone Star State beat out Florida and the Carolinas as the top destination for movers, according to U-Haul's annual count. It's the fifth time Texas has been the well-known equipment rental company's leading move-in location since 2016. Total U-Haul rentals were down slightly in 2022. The 2022 trends in migration followed very similar patterns to 2021, with Texas, Florida, the Carolinas, and the Southwest continuing to see solid growth. John J.T. Taylor, U-Haul International president, said in a prepared statement. While the overall migration in 2021 was record-breaking, we continue to experience significant customer demand to move out of some geographic areas to destinations at the top of our growth list. While most of U-Haul's customers are on their way to Texas and Florida, they had California, Illinois, and New York in their rearview mirrors. Those were the states with the greatest net losses of one-way U-Haul equipment. During the year ended July 2022, Texas added over 470,000 residents, the most of any state, according to census estimates. This article is entitled DPS, Two-Year-Old Boy Dies in Crash, by the Midland Reporter Telegram. A two-year-old from Midland died on December 21st after a collision at the intersection of East Business 20 and East Loop 250, according to a report Tuesday from the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that on December 17th, a Chevrolet Traverse was southbound when it was struck by a 2007 Honda Accord. Both drivers and three child passengers were transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, DPS reported. One of the child passengers was transported to Covenant Medical Center in Lubbock and on December 21st succumbed to his injuries. The two-year-old was not wearing a seatbelt, DPS said. The collision took place around 11:18 a.m. This article is entitled NFL Emergency, a Reminder About Cardiac Events, by Ben Schaffer. The Buffalo Bills and Cincinnati Bengals took the field Monday night for a huge AFC matchup with postseason implications. However, playoff home field advantage and dueling star quarterbacks would pale in comparison to the event that occurred mid-game. Near the end of the first quarter, Bills safety Damar Hamlin took a Bengals wide receiver to the ground in what appeared to be a routine tackle. The 24-year-old Hamlin stood up and promptly collapsed onto his back. The Bills stated via Twitter that Hamlin went into cardiac arrest following the hit. His heartbeat was restored on the field by first responders, and he was taken to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center, where he has been sedated and listed in critical condition. As incredibly tragic and frightening as Hamlin's event was, and continues to be, an NFL football field is a unique place of work. It's fully staffed with high-level physicians, doctors, and emergency response teams. Most workplaces are not outfitted to that caliber. So, how do Midland offices stay proactive in making sure their employees are equipped with useful knowledge regarding cardiac emergencies? Training at a minimum once a year, said Michael Tully, Assistant Chief of Administration for the Midland Fire Department. Tully said training for these events should include constructing a company-wide plan that a co-worker executes if they were to see a colleague in distress. Additionally, emergency supplies like an automated external defibrillator, AED, and other first aid equipment should be apparent and readily available in the workplace. Office workers should know how to contact the closest emergency responders. We have multiple people on the fire department that are CPR instructors. You can always go onto the American Heart Association website, and there's a list of resources in the local area, Tully said about local CPR training opportunities. Fortunately, Tully said that he's noticed defibrillators and emergency kits hung up, obviously, in Midland office buildings. Additionally, Tully said Midland companies do well to contact the fire department for training sessions, information on where to purchase equipment, and the like. Tully said, when contacted about an emergency, their emergency responders will arrive on scene within 3 to 4 minutes. This article is entitled, Natural Gas Prices Fall as Temperatures Don't. Warm Winter Causes Futures to Plunge on Weak Outlook, by Stephen Stapchinsky, Bloomberg. A warmer-than-expected start to winter in large parts of the world that could linger for weeks, especially across the United States, is easing fears of the natural gas crisis that had been predicted to trigger outages and add to power bills. Forecasts point to temperatures above seasonal norms for most of Europe and the United States over the next several weeks. It'll also be warmer across much of China, the world's biggest gas importer, over the next 10 days, and Tokyo may see a temperature spike around mid-January. Gas futures are plummeting on reduced fuel consumption and the weaker outlook. U.S. benchmark prices dropped as much as 12% on Tuesday to dip below $4 per million British thermal units for the first time since February. Despite a winter storm bearing down from coast to coast across the United States that sent natural gas forecasts soaring, much of the South and New England ended the month warmer than average, according to Brett Anderson, a meteorologist with AccuWeather. The risk of extreme market tightness that people were worried about before the winter started seems low now, said Abhishek Rohatgi, a Singapore-based analyst at researcher Bloomberg NEF. Europe has rebuilt inventories, while warmer weather across North Asia means there'll be less competition for liquefied natural gas cargoes, he said. Governments and utilities had been bracing for gas shortages after Russia invaded Ukraine last year, disrupting energy deliveries and lifting global demand for LNG. Prices for gas and coal hit a record as importers rushed to stockpile fuel for winter, when consumption peaks. Those efforts to build inventories mean the biggest consumers are now sitting on comfortable supplies. In fact, Germany was able to add more gas into storage at the end of December as a mix of warmer weather and lower activity during the holiday season trimmed fuel use. Gas stocks there are now above 90% full after slipping to a season low of 87% before Christmas. Gas storage across Europe is 84% full, far above the 5-year seasonal norm of 70%, according to Gas Infrastructure Europe. Part of the reason for the higher temperatures in what's usually the coldest month of the year is that polar vortex winds are keeping the frigid air bottled up farther north, Anderson said. It's allowed mild air off the Pacific Ocean to flow across the United States, keeping the cold at bay. We don't see any weakening, and as long as it stays strong, most of the cold stays up over the polar region, Anderson said. I don't see any Arctic outbreaks here for much of January. Wind has also been reducing stress on the Europe's energy systems. Germany is expected to produce near-record wind power Wednesday, according to a Bloomberg model, curbing the need for gas to produce electricity. Demand destruction in recent months has helped to balance the gas market. Some industrial consumers in Europe lowered or halted output because they didn't want to pay high prices, while emerging nations such as Pakistan and Bangladesh stopped importing LNG because they could no longer afford it. The impact in China of a surge in coronavirus cases should add to the muted picture, keeping gas demand lower there for the next few months, according to traders. Still, there are risks ahead from any unexpected bouts of extreme weather. A prolonged blast of late winter cold could drain gas inventories and catapult fuel prices higher. Utilities will also soon need to begin planning to avoid shortages again next winter as they adjust to a lack of Russian fuel. This article is entitled U.S. Surges to Top of LNG Exporter Ranks on Breakneck Growth by Stephen Stepchinski, Bloomberg. The U.S. tied Qatar as the world's top exporter of liquefied natural gas last year, a milestone for the meteoric rise of America as a major supplier of fuel. Both countries exported 81.2 million tons in 2022, according to ship tracking data compiled by Bloomberg. While that's a modest increase for Qatar, it marks a huge leap for the U.S., which only began exporting LNG from the lower 48 states in 2016 and has seemingly overnight become a dominant force in the industry. A shale gas revolution, coupled with billions of dollars of investments in liquefaction facilities, transformed the U.S. from a net LNG importer to a major supplier. The global energy crisis and a shift away from Russian pipeline gas has increased demand for U.S. LNG, which could also help support construction of several new export projects across the Gulf Coast. The U.S. would have been the world's top LNG exporter if not for a fire at the Freeport export plant in Texas, which has kept the plant shut since June. The facility is slated to resume operations later this month, which will cement the U.S. as the biggest exporter of the fuel. Still, the U.S. will need to build a lot more LNG export capacity if it wants to hold on to the top spot through the end of this decade. Qatar is in the midst of an enormous expansion to its production facility, which could solidify its position as the LNG leader from 2026. Australia is poised to remain as the world's third largest supplier. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, January 4th. Betty Nell Payne, February 1st, 1939 to December 29th, 2022. Betty Nell Payne of Midland went to heaven on December 29th, 2022, due to complications related to cancer. She was 83 years old. Betty was born on February 1, 1939, in Eastland, Texas, to parents Leona Jones and Sam Bennett Jones. Betty is survived by her son Terry and his wife Lori of Austin, her brother Sammy Jones of Waco, and her sister Kathy Platt of Austin. She is also survived by 7 grandchildren and 6 great-grandchildren. Betty is preceded in death by her husband Jerry, her daughter Missy, her mother and father, her brother Robert, and sisters Patsy and Joy Beth. The funeral service is scheduled for Friday, January 6th at 9 a.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Memorial, to be immediately followed by a graveside ceremony with a reception afterwards. All are welcome to attend and celebrate Betty's life. Flowers can be sent to Ellis Rest Haven, and any donations can be sent in memory of Betty Payne to Hospice of Midland or Crestview Baptist Church. Bonnie Snelson Robinson. Bonnie was born February 9, 1928, to George and Katie Pace in Hodge, Louisiana. She moved with her family to Texas at an early age. She is survived by her children and their spouses, Denny and Mona Snelson, Tim and Sherry Snelson, Steve and Janie Snelson, Mark and Trevis Snelson, and daughter-in-law Beverly Snelson Looney. Her 14 grandchildren and multiple great-grandchildren and 1 great-great-grandchild. She is preceded in death by her first husband, Leon Snelson, second husband, Cecil Robinson, her mother and father, her brother, Benny Pace, and sons, Terry Leon Snelson and Carrie Michael Snelson. Funeral service will be held on Thursday, January 5th at 2 p.m. at Hope Community Church in Midland. Burial at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland will follow the service. The family suggests any memorials be donated to Teen Challenge Midland or Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Carol Ann Johnson. Carol Ann Johnson went home to be with her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on December 26, 2022. Carol Ann was a lifelong resident of Midland, born at Midland Memorial Hospital on February 24, 1962. She was preceded in death by her loving parents, Jack Ward Johnson Sr. and Alma Geraldine Jerry Johnson. Survived by her big brother, Charles A. Johnson, USMC and U.S. Army retired, and his wife, Barbara Johnson, of Stockton, New Jersey. Also by Jack and Kathleen Johnson of Dallas, Texas. Nephew Colin Johnson of Austin, Texas. Quinn Johnson of Dallas. Griffin Johnson of Dallas. Niece Bryn Johnson of Dallas. And grandniece Maddie Johnson of Austin. As well as her beloved cousin, Melody Lynn Goolsby, Fort Worth. Services will be held at the chapel of Ellis Funeral Home on Thursday, January 5th at 2 p.m. In lieu of flowers, you can donate to a charity of your choice in Carol Ann's name. Corby Jackson Ogden. Corby Jackson Ogden, 27, of Midland, passed away on January 1st. Corby was born on June 12, 1995, to his loving parents, Roxanne and Patrick Ogden, in Odessa. He grew up in Midland with his older brothers, Ryan and Lane. Corby will always be remembered by his mother, Roxanne Ogden, his fiancée, Bailey Morgan, and their children, Conley and Brazen, his brother, Ryan Ogden, and his son, Hudson, his brother, Lane Ogden, his future in-laws, Sean and April Savage, and their three children, his future father-in-law, Terry Morgan, his grandmothers, Ginger Harrell and Patricia Tish Ogden. We may all find solace in knowing he has been reunited with his dad, Patrick, his pops, Jack Harrell, and his granddad, Bill Ogden. The family will receive friends on Thursday, January 5th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the branch at NPW. Memorial service will be held on Friday, January 6th at 10 a.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel. The family suggests memorials be donated to First Tee or Hunt with Heart. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Maxine Rogers. Maxine Rogers of Odessa stepped into God's eternal glory on Saturday, December 31st, at the age of 94. She was born during a thunderstorm July 21, 1928. William and Maxine were blessed with three children, Captain William A. Rogers, Jr., U.S. Navy, retired, of Waco, Vicki Busey Keith of Midland, and Sandra Rowe Andy of Odessa. She loved her children, but adored her six grandchildren and her 12 great-grandchildren. Family visitation will be at Frank Wilson Funeral Home on Thursday, January 5th from 6 to 8 p.m. The celebration of her life will be held Friday, January 6th at 11 a.m. at First Baptist Church in Odessa, followed by a burial Saturday, January 7th at 10 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Ninfa Mendoza. On December 29th, Ninfa Alvarado Mendoza, loving wife to Miguel, mother of Maximus, loving sister, woman of faith, and true friend, passed away at the age of 32 in Lubbock. Ninfa was born on January 8, 1990, in Midland. Ninfa met the love of her life and best friend, Miguel Mendoza. His family welcomed her with open arms, and they were married in August 2010. She was preceded in death by her grandpa, Jimmy Alvarado, her daughter, Mackenzie, her grandmother, Maria Vela, and son, Maximilian Mendoza. Viewing will be held prior to funeral services on January 4th at American Heritage Funeral Home from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. A funeral service will be held on January 4th at American Heritage Funeral Home beginning at 12 p.m. Burial immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery. Rodney Carl Roten. Rodney Carl Roten, 75, passed away on December 30th in Canton, Texas. Visitation and graveside services were held Tuesday, January 3rd at the Evergreen Cemetery Chapel in Stanton. Rodney was born to Lewis and Mamie Roten in Stanton on February 28, 1947. He grew up in Stanton and attended Stanton schools. He was preceded in death by his parents, Mamie and Lewis Roten. Rodney is survived by his children, Angela Kinnett and husband Mike of Edgewood, Texas, Trevor Roten of Port Aransas, Texas, and Stephanie Melton and husband Derek of Midland, as well as 11 grandchildren and 14 great-grandchildren. Brother Robert Roten and wife Patty of San Marcos, Texas, and sister Rhonda Gilliland of Midland, as well as many nieces and nephews. Arrangements are under the direction of Hyatt's Librand Funeral Home in Edgewood, Texas. Death Notices. Donna Gail Pinkerton. Donna Gail Pinkerton, 76, passed away Saturday, December 31st. Viewing will be Thursday, January 5th from 1 to 9 p.m., with a receiving of friends from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Friday, January 6th at 2 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Myrna Joyce May. Myrna Joyce May, 88, of Midland, passed away on December 30th. There will not be a service. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Thoris with the Odessa American News for Wednesday, January the 4th, 2023. The headlines: Judge issues restraining order against city. An Ector County District Court judge issued a temporary restraining order against the city of Odessa Tuesday, effectively giving fired city manager Michael Marrero and city attorney Natasha Brooks their jobs back. The city has been ordered to appear at a January 10th hearing to discuss the matter further. Local civil rights activist and attorney Gavin Norris filed a lawsuit against Mayor Javier Hovind and the City of Odessa December the 22nd, alleging they violated the rights of citizens when Hovind refused to allow them to speak prior to the council's 5-2 vote to oust Marrero and Brooks December the 13th. On December the 28th, he followed up with a motion asking Judge John Schroed to avoid the December 13th actions of the council and to issue a restraining order to, quote, maintain the status quo of City Attorney Natasha Brooks and City Manager Michael Marrero to their respective positions prior to the actions taken, unquote, by the council. He further asked the judge to issue an order stating the council cannot fire, remove, demote, or interfere with Brooks and Marrero's position without first allowing members of the public to address the city council. A hearing on the matter was set for January the 10th, but Schroed granted Norris's motion Tuesday, writing that there would be, quote, irreparable injury, loss, or damage, unquote, to Norris before notice could be served to the City of Odessa and the January 10th hearing could be held. In addition to avoiding Marrero and Brooks's terminations, Schroed also said the City Council is temporarily prohibited from promoting Dan Jones as interim city attorney and Agapito Burnell as interim city manager without allowing Norris and other citizens and members of the public the right to address the City Council first. Quote, our position remains the same. The mayor violated citizens' rights during that meeting, and he's hell-bent on continuing to do so, unquote, Norris said following the ruling. Quote, he doesn't want to answer to the people, but he'll be answering to the court, unquote. According to court documents, Schroed will determine if the temporary restraining order should be made a temporary injunction pending a final hearing on the lawsuit. Interim City Attorney Dan Jones has said he cannot comment on pending litigation, and Hovind and the rest of the City Council did not respond to a text and email sent Tuesday evening. Norris was one of several citizens who filled out cards to speak on the matter, but Hovind skipped that part of the agenda and only allowed them to speak after the vote during a portion of the meeting reserved for speaking out on non-agenda items. Marrero and Brooks were evaluated in October during an executive session, and no action was taken afterward. The December 13th vote came 3 weeks after three new council members, who all ran unopposed, were sworn in. One of the three, Gilbert Vasquez, opposed the terminations along with City Council member Steve Thompson. No explanations for the firings were given during the meeting. In a brief press conference afterward, Hovind simply said, quote, adjustments need to be made on the day-to-day leadership, unquote. City Secretary Norma Aguilar Grimaldo said Hovind would not be available for media interviews until January the 9th because he was going out of town. However, Hovind has since participated in Salvation Army bell ringing and swearing-in ceremonies. Thompson and a handful of city staff members who requested anonymity praised Brooks and Marrero's professionalism. The employees also alleged Hovind and council members Mark Mata and Denise Swainer have created a toxic environment at City Hall by micromanaging staff and placing them in fear of their positions. Assistant City Manager Cindy Muncy announced her January 6th resignation 6 days after the terminations. Longtime civil rights activist Gene Collins said he and others are, quote, working on a strategy, end quote, to launch a recall petition against Hovind and other members of the council. Quote, we've been having meetings. We're not going off half-cocked, unquote, Collins said. Returning to school, longtime educator still enjoys teaching. After a long career as a teacher and coach, Ricky Moore came back for more, this time as a substitute. Moore has worked for Ector County ISD as a full-time teacher and coach and substitute for 50 years. He started in 1972 at Crocker Junior High, now Crockett Middle School, staying for 32 years. Those 30-plus years included 26 years of coaching. Previously, he taught in El Paso for 2 years. Moore is retired, but has been substituting since 2004. A 1965 Permian High School graduate, Moore went to Sewell Ross State University, where he earned a degree in history, government, and special education. Most of his teaching was in special education and was head of the department at Crockett. He coached middle school athletics from 1976 to 2002. There's lots of educators in my family, Moore said. He and his wife, Shirley, have 2 daughters, both of whom are teachers. They also have 3 grandchildren. One daughter lives in Frisco and the other in Odessa. He spent a lot of time working, including a job at C.R. Anthony's department store from 1976 to 2000. Moore is based at Odessa High School most of the time. Shirley was a bookkeeper at the campus and has also been a special education aide. OHS President Anthony Garcia has known Moore for 10 years. He is always dedicated to helping the campus and helps out wherever he is needed. Coach volunteers his time at sporting events and enjoys working with students, Garcia said in a text message. What made him decide to sub after all those years of teaching? Quote, that's all I know is teaching, pretty much, Moore said. It helps pay the bills and I like the kids. I've always been around teachers, so I like the camaraderie, he said. After earning his degree, Moore decided to go into special education. By the luck of the draw, he got sent to Crockett and stayed 32 years. He coached all sports, football, basketball, track, and cross country. Moore said he loved it at Crockett and they had great administrators. I coached some great kids, Moore said. Since he's been in education so long, he observed that things move so much faster in terms of technology and curriculum speed. At the same time, it's taken a while to recover from COVID and not being in school, Moore said. The impact has been social and academic. Things are getting back to where they were socially. They haven't come back to good study habits, and that's what my granddaughter says. I have a granddaughter that is a sophomore at Reedy High School in Frisco. They were doing a project the other day, and they were working on something, she told. I just don't have the study skills to do it. I see it personally. She's a good kid, but it's taken her a while to recover, Moore said. He added that he has another granddaughter at the University of Houston that's doing really well. Quote, all my grandkids do well, Moore said. He added that he'll teach as long as he's healthy and the district has treated him well. Quote, I've always had really good administrators, teachers, and coworkers. It's all been pretty good. We've all gotten along together most of the time, pretty good, and helped each other, you know, unquote, Moore said. He added that he has enjoyed his 52 years of education and made lots of friends. Quote, I've seen lots of kids come through and turn out really good, even some kids that were in some of my resource classes. They turned out really good. They just needed a little extra help, unquote, Moore said. Simple landscaping strategies that can transform a home's exterior. The interior of a home may be where homeowners and their families spend the majority of their time, and there's no denying that a well-planned interior goes a long way toward making a house a home. However, the exterior of a home, including its landscaping, can serve as a source of pride and catch the eye of prospective buyers when the home hits the market. It's easy to walk past a home with an eye-catching exterior and assume the homeowner has a green thumb or has spent lots of time and money working on the landscaping. Though that may be true, oftentimes it's the simplest strategies that make all the difference. Homeowners can keep these strategies in mind as they look to transform the exterior of their homes. Four ideas: dress up the walkway. A longer walkway can give guests a strong first impression of a home and won't break the bank. Create new planting beds and plant bright plants and flowers along each side of the walkway. If it's necessary and within budget, lengthen the walkway to create the feel of a more grandiose entryway. Make things more symmetrical. A messy landscape can give a poor first impression, even if the area features some beautiful plants. In some instances, a little effort to make things more symmetrical with equal parts grass and vegetation can create a cleaner, more inviting look. Mulch your flower and tree beds. Mulch is a relatively inexpensive but effective way to add aesthetic appeal to a landscape. Freshly mulched beds beneath trees and flowers creates a clean and organized look, and the mulch also serves a practical purpose, as it reduces weed growth and helps the soil retain moisture, so plants stay healthy and look better throughout the warmer months when rainfall may be not steady or significant. Plant shade trees. Shade trees can be especially useful when selling a home. The shade provided by trees can shield grass from blistering summer sun, potentially helping it stay green. A lush green lawn appeals to buyers and gives the impression the home has been well maintained. In addition, shade trees can be used to create the look of a backyard oasis. A well-placed bench beneath a large shade tree can entice buyers who want a relaxing spot to enjoy warm summer days outdoors without getting a sunburn. Consider maintenance. The more exotic an exterior landscape is, the more maintenance it is likely to require. Lawn and garden enthusiasts may not be turned off by landscape features that require steady maintenance, but homeowners who don't have much time for such work should keep things simple. A poorly maintained landscape, even if it includes exotic plants and elaborate designs, will adversely affect curb appeal. Another feather in the cap of low-maintenance landscape features is they could prove more appealing to prospective buyers who may view elaborate, exotic landscaping as a lot of extra work they won't want to do. Some simple landscaping strategies can help homeowners transform their home exteriors without requiring a significant investment of time or money. Out with the leftovers and in with the new. United Supermarkets Lifestyle Desk says, "We love leftovers as dietitians. We love to be budget-friendly as well as not waste food. Who doesn't love these concepts, right? Did you know that the USDA reported that Americans waste more than 130 billion pounds of food annually? The even crazier statistic is that about 1 in 6 Americans go to bed hungry. Leftovers are a great way to not only ease up your physical time in the kitchen, but also your mental time stressing and preparing that meal. Another benefit is that it lends itself to more connection time together around the table. Family meals are gaining popularity again, and you'll see us promote family meal times every September for fresh ideas. With all the new food you will be bringing in this new year, here's a healthy tip. Think through that extra item you are about to put into your cart that's not on the grocery list. If you don't have a plan for it, you might end up wasting it. Items that are canned or frozen are easy to revamp, but if it has a quick expiration date or is fresh, be sure to have a backup plan to cook and freeze it. With all of this holiday leftover talk, we bet you might need a way to use up your leftovers rather than just putting them on another board. Let's revamp your party cheeses by giving them new life in a fancy dip called fromage. Basically, you take a few different types of cheeses and blend them together with a few additional spices as a spreadable dip. As easy as it sounds, there are a few important things to note, like cutting off any rinds and making sure the cheeses play well together. The ingredients to make fromage are a half a pound of three different cheeses, example two hard and one soft, a quarter to a half a cup of white wine like Pinot Grigio or Sauvignon Blanc, depending on the types of cheeses you choose, one tablespoon of olive oil, one teaspoon garlic powder, salt, pepper, and any other desired herbs. Roughly chopped cheese. Pulse it in a food processor or electric mixer until a uniform rough texture. Then add olive oil, garlic powder, and any additional herbs and spices, and roughly pulse a few times. Add in wine until you reach your desired consistency. Obituaries. Terry Lynn Papa Woods, age 69, of Odessa, passed away Thursday, December the 29th, at the Meridian Care Center in San Antonio, Texas. Bonnie Snelson Robinson was born February the 9th, 1928, and has passed away. Teresa Davis Keel of Odessa, age 77, died Sunday, January the 1st, in Odessa. Maxine Rogers died Saturday, December the 31st, at the age of 94. Greg Weaver, age 61, passed away at his home in Odessa on Tuesday, December the 27th. Macario Delgadio Hinojos, Sr., age 71, of Odessa, died Sunday, December the 25th, in Odessa. Mildred White Lee, 93, of Odessa, died Friday, December the 30th, in Odessa. Nifa Alvaredo Mendoza, age 32, of Midland, died December the 29th, in Lubbock. Corby Jackson Ogden, age 27, of Midland, died January the 1st, in Midland. Ruben Ramirez Jr., of Odessa, 39, died December the 22nd. Delma Christine Schwartz, age 88, of Odessa, died Monday, December the 26th, in Odessa. John Caraway Jr. departed this world on December the 18th. Janice Marie Otts Wood, 71, of Kingsland, Texas, died Friday, December the 30th, in Kingsland. Travis Lee Spoonmore, 72, of Odessa, died Sunday, December the 25th. Barbara Lane Warren, age 73, of Odessa, died Thursday, December the 29th. Richard Keith Davis, 38, passed away Sunday, December the 25th, in Midland. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 64-year-old female and weigh 130 pounds. I'm 5'8" tall. For years off and on, my primary doctor would tell me that my sodium level was low. Recently, my doctor said that if my sodium level is low again, I need to see a kidney specialist. I assume the low sodium is due to being diabetic and taking metformin. My other doctor also prescribed Losartan along with hydrochloride thiazide, HCTZ. I finally went to a nephrologist who took me off the Losartan combo, and now I'm just on Losartan. Blood work was ordered. The next doctor then told me to drink less water. I was drinking around 80 fluid ounces, but I have since curtailed my intake. A friend mentioned that I may have Addison's disease. She also has it. My symptoms are, at times, debilitating. Fatigue, weakness, lack of concentration and focus, heaviness, diarrhea, stomach pain like a punch in the gut, nausea, and deep belching. There are some good days. I have another appointment next year in mid-January, and more blood work is ordered. I have not mentioned Addison's disease to the doctors. What is your take, and how is Addison's disease treated? I'm so frustrated. Dr. Roach answers, low sodium levels are extremely common in people taking a diuretic in the thiazide class, like HCTZ. Years of being on HCTZ can also reset the body's normal sodium level, requiring a person to drink less water in order to keep their sodium level in the normal range. The symptoms you have are unlikely due to low sodium alone, even with a very low sodium level. None of the symptoms are specific to low sodium or Addison's disease, which is a cause of low cortisol levels. Addison's disease is quite rare, on the order of one person per 100,000. The hardest part about making the diagnosis of Addison's disease is thinking of it in the first place, since the major symptoms of fatigue and abdominal pain are not specific. Low sodium levels do occur with Addison's, so I think mentioning the possibility to your doctor is a smart idea. The initial blood testing for Addison's disease is not routinely done and requires an injection of a medication that should make your cortisol level go up. If it doesn't, that's strong evidence of Addison's disease.
This is the Dear Abby column. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been married 9 years and have 4 children, ages 5, 3, 2, and 9 months. For the past 3 years, my husband has been attending a week-long music festival where he camps with a group of friends, many of whom are single. He met most of them attending this particular fest. While they are at these shows, they partake in psychedelics and other party drugs. The arena is wild, with scantily clad women and people partying to the fullest. I have explained to him how this bothers me, and that I don't believe it's the best environment for a married man and father of 4 small children. I feel it threatens our marriage. He says I can come if I want, but that I'd need to find childcare for the week, an option we don't have since losing our parents. In truth, I feel like a burden to him, and he prefers going solo to get a release from the everyday responsibilities of our life together. Each year, I ask him not to go, but he does it anyway. I'd greatly appreciate your insight about this. Signed, Left Behind in Real Life. Dear Left Behind, you are not a burden. You are shouldering the entire responsibility of caring for the family while he goes off and indulges himself. If this trip is your husband's 1 week escape from reality, is he willing to agree to the same for you? I'm sure you could benefit from a week away from mothering 3 small children and an infant. While I would equate your husband's escape to the music festival with the hunting and fishing trips some husbands take each year, the difference is that there are fewer temptations on those other outdoor pastimes. If he's a good husband the other 51 weeks of the year, and there is nothing you can do to dissuade him, then dwell on the positive. If he isn't, you may have some serious thinking to do about whether you want to remain in this marriage. Dear Abby, my wife and I have assisted a local youngster who was abandoned at birth and bounced through foster care. We helped him finish college and start his first job. Here's the problem. Samuel has become engaged to an attractive professional woman my wife and I both like. However, he just told us she insists upon bringing her parents on the honeymoon. Her parents feel strongly that they should go, even to the extent of arguing with Samuel about it. I have never heard of anything like this. His fiancée is 28 years old. I'm very wary about it. What advice would you give him? Signed, Crowded Honeymoon. Dear Crowded, unless Samuel and his fiancée have been living together for a long time, and he's very close to her family, the advice I would give him would be to have plenty of premarital counseling before he marches down the aisle. There's likely more than one issue that should be ironed out before any vows are exchanged, and it would help to avert disagreements that could cause problems after the wedding. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.